Stack Pack. Perhaps you can help solve a mystery. And then I went to go Saturday TV Fun House, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey guys, welcome to the Farina Friends. Today we're covering season 5, episode 7.
I thought we were going to call Farina. It Farina Files.
I feel like Farina Friends is I don't know, it's kind of cute.
The Farina Friends? I guess it's like the a Farina play Friends. On Stack Pack, yeah, I guess that's better.
Yeah, because, yeah. We're just a, yeah, we like Robert, we're a pack of people that like Robert Stack, and we're just a bunch of friends that like Dennis Farina.
the bizarro Stack Pack.
Yeah, he just talks about how ladies are disappearing from their car. Car.
That's the perfect Dennis Farina.
It always comes back to Dennis Farina. What's up, guys? Stack Pack, we're covering season 5, episode 7, right?
Yes.
So this is Halloween of 1992 we're talking about. October 28th is when this episode aired.
Yeah, we're not talking about any murder today. It's all weird stuff and Chris Stapleton. He's going to come at the end. He's going to do a guest spot. He's going to sing us out with his big long beard.
Is he the one who got caught on video saying the bad... The N-word?
No, that is not Chris Stapleton. That's the...
Is he the guy that's kind of big and, like, he's a heavy guy, but, like, he sounds...
Yeah, he's big and he's got a big old beard.
But he sounds, like, kind of folky, right? Like, old school.
Oh, he's one of the Duck Dynasty brothers.
Yeah, he looks like a Duck Dynasty brother, exactly.
Yeah, but he's, like... I mean, it's country, but it's also kind of folky and Americana, right?
Yeah, a little
bit. He was on SNL, right?
Was he might have been.
I think he was a musical guest on SNL. I saw him and I liked him, but don't quote me on it.
He's good.
Today on the Stapleton Files.
Stapleton.
The stable.
Stapleton soiree. Fuck. Welcome to the Staples Center. Where we talk about
the Stapleton Center. Where we just talk about Chris Stapleton all day.
So the unexplained, in this first case, we're traveling to the ghostly beaches of Moss, to Moss Beach, California. It's a distillery that's been there forever. It used to be a notorious speakeasy. I do have to say right off the bat that Robert Stack, says loose women.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a seedy. Oh,
where's Dan when we need him to say? Hoors.
Hoors.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was pretty funny that I was like, whoa, he just said loose women.
Yeah,
I was like,
did.
What else could that mean? No, that means one thing. Okay.
It means whores.
Yeah. Well, he was talking about the distillery during the speakeasy, you know, and there's lots of bootleggers and nefarious things going on.
Can I comment about the bartender's line about, like, this is the finest gin money can buy, and it just straight up looks like fucking dirty mud water?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the way they used to make it, baby.
Probably that was some of the best, you know, during that time.
This gin will make you blind.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what you want.
That's exactly what I want.
So it's haunted as fuck, and there's, like, 17 different ghost stories. It's like there's either 7 different ghosts, or it's not haunted at all, and everyone's full of shit.
You don't think there's just one that they just can't figure out who it is?
Yeah, yeah.
It's all so the first poor ghosts.
Stack assures us that it's not even haunted. He's been there all fucking day. He's got a smile on his face.
The House of Sin and Gin, baby. And whores. and loose women.
I was going to say, he's like, I've powered through 4 craft services tents and not a single haunting.
He's like, I took my checkbook out. Nothing. Not even floating a little bit. It didn't even dance. Floating checkbooks. That's very 90s to me. The waitresses always experience a cold wind when there's no windows or doors open. I don't know. Apparently there's a ghost called the Blue Lady, and there's like 5 different like origin stories versions, to the Blue Lady. Right? And none of them, they're all alleged.
It's like a really scary comic. There's all these origin stories. The Blue Lady is like a superhero ghost.
It's like the New 52 version of the Blue Lady origin.
We just don't know where she comes from. These are different universes.
This is like an Elseworlds Blue Lady Origins, where she was around during the Jack the Ripper times. Pretty cool.
Can I give a quick throwdown of what the first Blue Lady story is?
Well, but I also got to mention that we're going to talk about the Blue Lady where she was actually born in Russia, so it's so different.
You mean salt?
Blue Lady Red Sun. Anyway, yeah. So...
the floating checkbooks, man.
So you want to give us a little rundown on the first?
Yeah, the story behind Blue Lady One is she was a girlfriend of a notorious bootlegger who was in love with the pianist, kind of like a star-crossed lover kind of story.
Let's call the bootlegger Sammy Pockets and the pianist
Pete the Piano
Jerry. Jerry Fingers.
We're not going to give him names. That's just going to get too...
Jerry Fingers and Sammy Pockets. He's got deep pockets and he's a bootlegger.
Anyway, the pianist and the lady in blue had kind of like a secret relationship where they would communicate with each other by raising their eyebrows and giving winks to each other, which in hindsight probably wasn't the best form of communication.
Yeah, cross
anyway,
the
line. So...
I mean, her name was Betty Eyebrows, so everybody was just staring at her eyebrows all the time.
So anyway, one night while playing the piano, the pianist raises his eyebrow towards the lady in blue saying like, hey, let's meet up. So they go out onto the beach and start making out while her boyfriend randomly shows up and says, where's my girl? He discovers his girl out on the beach making out with the pianist and they get into a little scuffle. To the point to where they kind of start having a fight where the pianist pulls out a knife and accidentally stabs the lady in blue.
But while the bootlegger, Jerry Pockets, I'm sorry, getting him mixed up, Tony Pockets, whatever.
What did you call him? Damn.
Well, it was something Pockets. While he approaches, I like that he just says, in a very 90s way, he's like, very bad move, Eddie. Like, it just, I don't know. I just didn't seem very, like, very natural dialogue.
I just like the part where, like, when Robert Stack was talking, you can hear him in the background, like, shaking the guy, like, where's my woman? He's like, whoa, dude. Like,
yeah. So, yeah. So, in the kerfuffle, like Dan said, she ends up stabbed and dead. And she haunts the restaurant because she's, like, mad, I guess.
Well,
wouldn't you be?
One of the takes is that the female waitresses at the restaurant suspects that she haunts the place because she feels threatened of the female waitresses.
Oh, yeah. Anytime a sexy new waitress comes in, she's like, I'm going to make that checkbook float.
Grab me a check, lady.
Oh, and she also calls men's name out in a sexily, very sexily.
Sexily? You mean sensually?
Sensual, yeah.
I like sexually.
Very ASMR, like the Britney Spears 1-800 hotline, where you could call 2 minutes and just hear Britney Spears whisper.
I was going to say we may sound drunk.
How much does that cost?
But in all honesty, we're dead sober.
Yeah,
I'll pay money for that.
This is
we did Britney wrong. yeah. So she mischievously calls out names and. Apparently, yeah. The lady was saying, she's like, she's good. You know, she's like not a bad ghost. She's just kind of mischievous. Pat and Dave Andrews used to own the place, and they said that the ghost was notorious for locking them out. They lived on the property, and the ghost would always lock them out of rooms. And Pat is the one who says that, she's the one who tells us about her floating checkbook.
Is that like bouncing a check?
It's a floating check. It's better.
She said it was just as easy as demanding that just put that back, and that the ghost just put the check back.
Like
checkbook
back. Checkbook back. Sorry.
Like a toddler.
Yeah. Also, there's a story of the a bunch of the kids playing outside on a cliff.
Oh, this is my favorite.
But this one, doesn't she speak Spanish?
No. You're getting close.
That comes later. That's like story two.
Oh, three, yeah. Four. I'm mixing stories here.
That's Blue Lady number cinco.
So one day these kids were playing on a cliff and a lady appeared to them and said, like, don't do that.
She's like, children, please, it's dangerous. Listen to me, children.
Hurry.
Listen to me, hurry. Children. Go away.
Go back.
Go back. It's like,
yeah, but Dan's performance was way better. This actress was like, yeah, she was, yeah, stiff.
Well, she's dead, and David.
She was stiff as a doorknob.
She was stiff as the corpse that she, her spirit came from. Whatever. Okay. Anyway.
She was as stiff as a body hitting rigor mortis.
Stiffer than the penises at the bathtub gin bootlegger whorehouse.
Oh, we're stiffer, going to hell.
Stiffer than a bootlegger's penis.
Stiffer than Jerry Finger's penis.
He didn't even have fingers. He played with his dick.
All right. So next, there's this lady named Consuelo, and she's like, she's a housekeeper. She works on the property, and a lady appears to her twice. And the lady, the first time, the lady asks her name, and she says, "Yeah." She asks, "Are you Consuelo?" And she says, "Yes." And then she says, "You have something that belongs to me." And then the next time, she's like straight up in the buff.
Yeah. Taking a shower.
Getting out of the shower. And the ghost appears to her again. And it's in the reenactment. I think it's her playing herself. But also, she seems to have zero reaction to a ghost just appearing to her. She's like, no, I don't have anything that belongs to you.
She sees him all the time.
The second time she appears, she says that, she says, me amo Alma Reed. And then that name actually rings a bell to her, and she realizes that she has sheet music that her father gave to her that's about Alma Reed, right? Because right. The song was written by her father's very good friend, a man named Ricardo, and he was a famous singer.
Yep.
And he wrote this song about her, and this is where we get like another Blue Lady origin story, right? Like, Alma Reed was in a relationship with this singer, and then she was with another man, and then she just couldn't take not being with the singer, so she walks into the ocean. Yeah. Right? Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Ricardo Paulo Marine. Right? So was his name.
He actually wrote that song, "When the Moon Hits Your Eye Like a Big Pizza Pie." That's
Amore.
There we go.
Alma Reed.
I was hoping you would have jumped in faster with the Alma Reed part.
He was too busy drinking and bourbon.
It works. We'll fix it in post. We'll fix it in post.
Next, they get this kooky psychic in. And the psychic is like, immediately gives them the name Mary Ellen Morley, and she talks about seeing this lady swathed in, I like the way she uses the word swathed in fabrics, and that she estimates she was like 26 or 27. This is all dialogue from
the So this is this is the third or fourth already Blue Lady ghost.
I believe this is Blue Lady number 19.
This would technically be, I guess, the third so far, even though I don't know. I guess you could put the lady on the cliff story. That could be any of the origins. Yeah.
It's so, starting to sound like a perfume. Oh, can I get a lady in blue 19?
So this lady also said that this lady, Mary Ellen Morley, was killed with blows to the head and chest. So they actually looked into this and they were able to find out that she existed. Two employees even dug into some records and found out that weirdly, this lady's maiden name was Reed, and that she had a sister coincidentally named Alma. So there was an Alma Reed vaguely involved, maybe even not with the property. I don't know. It's weird.
That is weird.
Anyways, apparently they were able to find out, they were able to find the story of her dying, Mary Ann Morley, and it made front page of the newspaper. The story was she lived in the Redwood City, which was around San Francisco, and they drove to visit a gravesite of one of their parents, her and her husband. And on the way back, they get in a car wreck, and she was, like, pinned under some wreckage, and she died on the scene, and she, like, told her husband to take care of her son.
Take care of their son,
She died, like, 15 miles away from the distillery, right?
A few miles. I think they said it was just, like, just up the road.
So at least this one, we have some credibility. We have a news story, front page news.
And there was a car wreck, and her cause of death was severe damage to her chest and head.
So maybe this one I'm more inclined to buy a little bit more.
Well, because you can prove that it, right. Yeah.
The other ones are just hearsay.
But it's also like a psychic could have just like found like.
Like all that stuff prior to going over there?
Yeah. Yeah. So what does she do? They do a seance. And Sylvia is the name of the psychic. And she starts naming off a bunch of other people, a bunch of other ghosts. She starts talking about Anna and John and Hannah. And, you know, just naming other a bunch of fucking ghosts. And then she even said something about a fire. Like, a fire is going to happen soon. And a fire did break out a couple weeks later because the psychic fucking said it. Don't they see what's happening?
Yeah. She could have went back and lit that fire herself.
So there's like 15 ghosts or zero ghosts or I don't know.
Or one ghost or no ghosts.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems to me like the psychic, you know, dug through some papers, found something that matched.
I think she was just better at research than the researcher.
Went through the microfiche at the local at the local library. I got to do my homework for this one.
She says her name is Mary Ann Morley. And she wore blue.
I mean, that wouldn't be too hard to find, right?
And her friends called her Betty Eyebrows.
It's the same one.
It all makes sense.
Then that's when Robert Stack says that he spent time there and never had his checkbook stolen.
I go so far as to say, it's not scary. It's actually quite pleasant. Next case.
Hold on. Let me get a refill.
Our second set of ghosts is the Civil War ghosts, which Robert Stack gives us like a rundown on the Civil War. But let's skip that.
Racist Civil War ghosts.
They were. Yeah. I forgot about that part. Yeah. Yeah.
He did work with the Indians.
Yeah. He got so much awards for his racist with the Indians. Work. You mean fucking murdering people that were there before you, you bitch. Anyway, let's talk about this dead motherfucker.
I remember this story from when I was a kid, actually. I remember the...
You know, I was thinking maybe I do too, but I feel like there's a lot of, like, Civil War ghosts.
No, I think the one scene that I remember was when he goes to the table when he goes walking towards her. That's what I remembered. That one little clip.
Which part?
Let's talk about it. I'll let you know the scene.
Okay. So this takes place in Wilmington, California. In 1862, they set up a little military installation. This place was a key center for training and processing some troops. But by 1992, it was no more than a small building with a modest little museum inside. But this museum had spooky tour guides.
Racist tour guides.
Racist spooky race. That one's, you can't really say racist with like a chipper fun tone.
Racist.
Well, I mean, at least I personally can't. Racist. Oh, no. It's just saying it with a smile on the face just doesn't feel very. Here, everybody, let's everybody try it. Everybody at home. Say racist in the happiest, most upbeat way.
In the ghostiest way as possible.
Oh, yeah, and spooky. Yeah, yeah. In 1986, they did a kind of overhaul of the small museum. They restored a bunch of stuff to its original glory, and a bunch of volunteers and people put a lot of work into it. After they started doing this, they noticed that it kind of awoken the spirits in the place, if you will.
Yeah, ghosts don't like change.
Or I think it's more of like it started to feel like the place that they remembered. So they started like, all right, I'm going to go ahead and sit down and turn the lights on and off and open the lamp, you know, open the window shades and close them and do all sorts of stuff. In summer of 1989, one employee even heard, this guy explains how he heard somebody walking.
Oh, the exterminator?
No. This guy, it's the older guy. I think he's one of the, not owners, but the older white guy. He says that he heard footsteps, and then he heard somebody walk down the stairs and the door open.
Right.
But like but nothing was there. And I think,
oh yeah, I think that's right.
Was locked, right?
Yeah. He said he was the only one there and he heard a door on the floor below him open and he went out to the stairwell and saw nothing. So he went into the next hallway and went downstairs expecting to find someone hiding out in the gift shop and there was no one there.
Yeah. Cause he could see both staircases, right? He saw the door close and he immediately went and there was no one there.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because he said he never actually saw anything, but he's like, yeah, that was plenty to convince him. Like, he never saw an actual apparition or a racist ghost.
Yeah, he went to the bathroom, gift shop, nothing.
In 1991, a lady who was one of the volunteers, the people that helped maintain the place and keep it clean and stuff, she actually had some interesting experience. She actually had an interesting experience happen to her. She left the building after they were cleaning, a day of cleaning and stuff, and they were all in the parking lot, you know, like planning the next day's work. And when she looked back at the building and saw the shades in one of the upstairs rooms, the window shade just opened by itself, and she was even like, "Hey, Did you see that? No one else noticed.
Yeah. She had closed them. Before they leave, it shows her closing them in the reenactment.
So Fred Duran was the exterminator who, I guess he had been there a bunch of times. It was like one of his normal, you know, one of his normal customers. He said he was working in the old house, as he called it. And he was in the kitchen when somebody came in and asked, what did the person say? Like, have you seen somebody? Like,
have you seen Martha?
Have you seen Martha or have you seen Mary or something?
Or Wilma. Might have been Wilma. He also said, I need a glass of water.
Alma Reed. No, he wasn't asking for that.
I'm looking for Alma Reed.
Yeah, so it was an old-timey man in old-timey clothes. And when he left, he told one of the other employees working, he's like, dang, you guys take this pretty seriously. Like, I just saw the guy in the house. He's like all dressed up in Civil War stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the captain?
Yeah. And they were just like, you saw a ghost. Congratulations.
Captain Crunch is his name.
And he was like, the fuck?
I'm never coming back here again.
Wow, Eli, your Hispanic really showed in that one.
Oh, I know.
I got a family. I'm never coming back here again.
I'm never going to come back
here again. My name is Fred Duran.
They call him Captain Crunch.
I vamos out of there. I don't know what that word means.
Yeah, that's not how it goes.
Let the rhythm take you over.
I saw a ghost.
I saw a ghost. Yeah, so the captain's ghost was seen by the exterminator. In 1991, this one psychic, they convinced this psychic to go down, and she just saw like a gaggle of ghosts just hanging out.
Yeah, this is the one. This is the scene that I saw, that they were just hanging out like around the table, and then one of them comes.
Were they playing poker?
I don't know what they were doing, but one of them comes and like looks at a map, like close
by. They were playing striptease, strip poker. Sorry, and then one of the ghosts just looks at her and says, move this chair closer to the fire. I'm cold. It's like, what a fucking demanding asshole ghost, first of all.
Ungrateful.
Yeah. And then they were able to decide that he was this general
Yeah, because he was cold, they knew that he was a general who got his foot ripped off.
Yeah, right? It wasn't ripped off. He had frostbite.
Yeah, well, they ripped it off because he had frostbite.
Because of the frostbite, he had some nerve damage in his ankle, so he would wear a shoe smaller, one size smaller, to kind of give him more support.
That makes sense. I'm just shaking my head. So Colonel Curtis...
can't refute science.
Imagine they accidentally amputated the wrong one.
Yeah.
So it was just dangerous.
We left him his bad one.
Okay. So they were able to find out that Colonel Curtis, he did have a fucked up foot. And yeah, so maybe it was him. And he had gotten awards for, you know, murdering Native American people. And they lovingly say that he was celebrated and had awards for his work with the Indians. Which is just like...
quotation marks. Work
with the Indians.
Well, that's how they used to word things back then. Different time.
Yeah. Work. Yeah. Dig 'em up. Just a little dig 'em up popping. Hey guys, just a little disclaimer here. James F. Curtis was in the California State Militia, and he fought for California in the Civil War. We're kind of dumb. He definitely didn't fight for the Confederates. I mean, he might still be kind of racist. I mean, he was a white man in the 1800s, but. But anyway, we don't know what he did with the so-called Indians that he worked with. Just popping in. Okay, back to the show. Dig him up. So Colonel Curtis is probably still haunting that place, asking any museum employee they can to move his fucking chair closer. Yeah. I think that's a fitting in for.
Oh well, there's a couple things they also talk about. They also talk about the little kid playing ball in the hallway.
Oh yeah, that's right. And like the ladies, like there's a little boy playing in the hallway, and the employee was like, "Oh, that's what that is." That was kind of cool.
Yeah, and then she sees more.
She stuff. Also said, "Like he'll stop if you ask him." And she's like, "Nah."
Yeah, and then she also sees another thing where they're, like, hanging out again, and he's digging in a box, and he was pointing to the wall. He wanted them to see their award that he won or whatever. So.
Award about, you know, being shitty.
Working with Indians.
Colonel Curtis.
Yeah. Well, actually, maybe they were on the – what side were they on? We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. We're already making assumptions.
I don't know. Maybe they did work with Indians. I feel like there was something in the story that made me think that he was...
He was the chief of police of San Francisco. James F. Curtis. He was a participant of the 1849 California Gold Rush. And he was an officer in the California State Militia and a volunteer in the American Civil War. But it doesn't say whose side he was on.
California. He probably might have been a good guy. I don't know. Anyway, so if you want to go visit him, go to Wilmington. So lots of spiritual activity at this army facility from the Civil War. Yeah, so the next case is Lost Loves. Fucking.
Both of you at the same time. This lady was a real big piece of shit.
Yeah, the San Antonio baby thief, Ethel Merman. Just kidding.
All I'm going to say about this case is, like, when Robert Stack was like, she did this for over 20 years, I started to think, I was like, what kind of achievement do you get for 20 years worth of, like, selling babies? Do you get, like, a plaque or, like, a trophy?
You get a bunch of angry fucking adults asking you, who the fuck are my parents? Yeah. And then she just starts yelling at them and saying, your mother was a slut.
Yeah.
Your mother was a whore.
She was a whore.
You're better off.
Yeah, so basically, it's just a story about a bunch of kids who are now grown who are looking for their birth parents. Come to find out, there's a lot of these cases that were tied to this woman.
Yes.
So definitely, she definitely took kids. I mean.
The one interesting thing I thought about this case after reading about it was that once, because this case basically, we'll just give a little over, I'm not going to go into it, but one guy is looking for his birth mom with the help of his adopted mom. And then along the way, they find this other lady who's looking for her birth mom, who was also, you know, adopted through the same lady. But what's crazy is that once they were actually reunited, this lady said that she's like, come work for me. You can have your baby and you can earn some extra money. And, you know, so one day while she was like cleaning the house, she took the baby in the other room to like change the baby and then just fucking took off. Like,
yeah.
She had never agreed to give her baby up. So we're assuming that's what happened with a lot of people.
She took them. She just stole the babies, put them up for adoption. There was a couple that they did talk about, that they said they had gotten denied, which I don't even know how. I know that.
I mean, she traded a boat for a fucking baby.
Yeah, it's pretty. The criteria that you have to meet to check all the boxes, the pedigree, we should say, the pedigree to meet that you have to meet to be able to adopt a baby. It's pretty rigorous. I don't know how the standards were back then.
But either way, her, it was just $1,700 or a ski boat.
This couple, they said they kept getting denied, and all of a sudden they met Ethel. They heard about her. They went to her house, and all of a sudden she had a room full of three babies, two twins, right? One, she wanted to keep the twins together. One
was, but she didn't.
Oh, what a saint.
Yeah.
She was like, eh, you know,
we could. Well, she's like, I'd like to keep them together, but we could work something out. Anyways, yeah. they didn't know that they would be able to take the baby home right then. But she said, if you got the money, you could take it right now. And they said, well, just like that, like we didn't. And she kind of got mad at him. She said, I thought this was already done. This is a done deal. Anyways. Yeah. That's basically, Ethel's a terrible person. She did blame it on the mothers, that the mothers didn't want them, but we clearly have heard stories that.
Yeah. And the guy, Scott Mers, who was trying to find his, he never was able to find his mom, but the other girl does, and we get to see them reunite.
Oh man, they're so they look the same.
Yeah, they looked exactly the same.
They're like sisters.
You trying to hit on the mom? They were like sisters.
Oh no, what's going on?
Is that really a checkbook?
Yep.
Oh shit! There's a floating checkbook. There's a floating checkbook. That's funny. I was like, damn, I've never seen a checkbook.
No, you know what's funny is I have them because we used to pay our rent with them a long time ago, but Jocelyn needed one because she's getting some direct deposit, and the company that she's going with, they're like, we need a blank check. I said, really? I said, you can give them your account and your routing number. She said, no, they said they absolutely need a blank check. I said, okay. So I had to pull it out of the filing cabinet. So then I just looked down and I saw it. I was like, oh my God, that's so weird.
Oh my God. There's
6 months from now, you're going to open up your bank account and you're going to discover $60,000 are missing.
Nah, she wrote void on it. but you know, yeah, that's really the story. She needed it this morning. So that's really funny that that's there.
Synchronicities.
Synchronicities.
Synchronicities. The last case is amnesia. You guys remember Pierre April. This is the case where they update Pierre April, and then they talk about
Pierre's been found.
And they, well, his family's been found. So then they talk about bad hair Sandra, who has the worst hair.
Bad hair Sandra.
Anyway, her hair's so bad. fucking Jimmy Pockets. So
Jimmy Pockets, that's what it was. And what, Freddie Fingers?
Freddie Fingers.
I don't know what you said, man. It was crazy.
Yeah, Freddie Pockets and
Jerry Fingers. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, it was Jimmy Pockets and what did you
Jerry
say?
Fingers?
Jerry Fingers.
I don't know. I recorded it. We'll see. Anyway,
it sucks that we didn't remember. That would have been funny to do all the way through.
So there's this lady, Sandra Evans. She couldn't remember anything. May 14th, 1992, she faints at a Dallas bus station, which from experience, I could tell you 2014 Dallas bus station is pretty creepy.
Oh, yeah.
I bet your 1992 one is, too. She faints and nobody knows who she is. Total amnesia is what she says. And everybody is like, who are you? She couldn't remember her name, but like her luggage said Linda Kennedy. And there was pictures of her as a bride, and there was pictures of some kids that she had, but she like didn't know who these kids were. She was just kind of like, she's like, if I have children and I don't know where they are, like, you know, this is just too much. She thinks that there was something traumatic or violent that happened to her that caused this. And, like the Dallas police, they said like counties, police stations from everywhere were calling and trying to confirm her, and they couldn't confirm until this aired on Unsolved Mysteries. The night it aired, somebody called in and said, hey, that's my sister. I think it was her sister. And her real name was Carol Ann Rozak. And
I wonder where she got the name from that was on the
Linda Kennedy or Lisa Kennedy or whatever. Yeah, it's really weird. So she says that she gets to hang out with her kids, or she talks to her daughter immediately, and her daughter was happy to hear from her. And it's just a really weird story. And then it ends with them saying that apparently she resides with her daughter in Canada, and that's it. But it's like, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of unanswered questions in that story.
Very. We should call a bad hair Sandra. It's crazy. Some of the same buildings are still there in the Dallas skyline, but they've added so much.
Yeah, it just says she was undergoing therapy in order to recover her memories.
That's scary.
Yeah, there's nothing more on her. Carol, she did say that she was prepared for like some weird story. Like she didn't know what she was going to find out about herself. And apparently she didn't want to share that with anybody. Thanks for listening this week. I know there's some aliens.
Dude, there's some UFOs next week we're talking about.
Yeah, we started watching the next week's episode a little early, and oh boy, the special effects team.
Did they knock it out of the park?
Well, I would say they showed up and did some work.
We're not going to say if it's good or bad, but they did work.
They put in a day's work. Yeah, it's great. It's like a funny European man. I don't know. I was in and out, but it was a funny European man talking about walking straight up to a UFO. So I can't wait to get into that. What else is there?
There is a missing person, missing person from Louisiana. He was basically a staple to the town. All of a sudden goes missing. Nobody knows what happened to him.
Interesting.
And then we're also going to talk about a women's prison. And for the past decade, deaths of the prison guard, it led to controversial allegations of corruption inside the prison walls. So,
ooh, 60 days in, let's fix that prison from the inside. Cool. Thanks for hanging out with us, guys. We'll be back next week. We're going to start doing some Instagram lives to talk about the Unsolved Mysteries podcast. And that should be fun.
Yeah, the first episode was solid. Second episode was really good. They cover one case each.
Yeah, so we could just do a little update and just...
Not very long. Definitely worth checking out.
Oh, yeah. Like we said last time, classic Unsolved Mysteries vibes. The music is a little more 90s, and the voiceovers very much harkens back to the original show. They're doing really good stuff over there. And yeah, this second week was really good. So I've been David Howell. Thanks for joining me. As always, Daniel Benavides.
Are you going to say something to Dan?
I've been Road Dan or Home Dan or Plum Dan. Just Dan.
That's Dan.
And I'm going by Daddy Dominguez lately.
And Daddy Dominguez.
Daddy D.
Daddy D. Big Daddy D.
The Big Bad Vinyl Dad himself. Daddy D's a little too, I don't know. It's, I don't know, something about it. No, stop it. Yeah, for every mystery, someone somewhere knows the truth. Perhaps that someone is listening, and perhaps that someone is you. If so, yeah, unsolvedmysteries.com. don't at us. I mean, I would like to know about it. Second.
Just CC us in it.
Well, yeah, let us know second. Yeah, stackpackpodcast@gmail.com.
We'll share the reward. We promise.
@gmail.com.
We'll have you on. You can talk about it.
Yeah, that would be cool. Anyway, yeah, okay, good night. Bye.